It's about loneliness. It's about aging as a gay man. It's about the loss of friends to AIDS. It's about the loss of the narrator's mother. It's about the loss of a lot of stuff, but I wasn't aware of it at the time. Besides, grief is useless after a certain point. Don't you agree? I suppose so, I said, but everyone's point is different. Of course, he said, but the sooner you get over it, the better. Because none of us has any time to waste, you know.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. There's a promising forecast for civil unions in Uruguay, but more attack outings in Uganda, and Dancer's author steps into grief. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Kareem Ferguson.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 16, 2006. Uruguay is on the verge of becoming the first country in South America to legally recognize gay and lesbian couples. New legislation by the ruling leftist coalition of President Tabaré Vázquez has already passed the Senate and is expected to pass easily in the Chamber of Deputies. The measure to create a civil unions registry would grant same-gender and unmarried heterosexual couples who have been together for at least 5 years all the rights of marriage. LGBT advocacy groups in the country say they will still continue to push for full marriage equality. Supporters of the civil unions measure argue that judges have been unsure how to rule in a number of cases involving same-gender couples because the country does not now legally recognize them, particularly in the areas of adoption, pensions, and inheritance. In a region often dominated by the queer, unfriendly Roman Catholic Church, civil unions registries have already been established in neighboring Brazil, in the city of Buenos Aires, and in the state of Rio Grande do Sul. Similar legislation is expected to be introduced later this year in the Chilean Congress.
But a queer rights organization in South Africa is expressing concern about a civil partnerships bill there. The LGBT advocacy group OUT says the proposed legislation falls short of last December's constitutional court order that same-gender unions be given legal status equal to married heterosexual couples. In its ruling, the High Court gave Parliament a year to amend the country's marriage law, mandating that whatever legislative remedy is chosen must be as generous and accepting towards same-sex couples as it is to heterosexual couples, both in terms of the intangibles as well as the tangibles involved. In a context of patterns of deep past discrimination and continuing homophobia, appropriate sensitivity must be shown to providing a remedy that is truly and manifestly respectful of the dignity of same-sex couples. But according to a statement issued by Fikile Vilakazi, OUT's advocacy officer, the civil partnerships bill now before Parliament will mean the administration of a separate legal structure for same-sex couples. This sends out a message that gay and lesbian people are second-class citizens. The civil partnership option should be provided in addition to marriage, not as a replacement to it. Meanwhile, the Marriage Alliance of South Africa has been sponsoring marches in Cape Town, Durban, and other cities to protest giving any legal rights to gay and lesbian couples. It's uncertain what form the final version of the mandated legislation will take in the world's first country to constitutionally ban sexual orientation discrimination. South Africa's parliament has a few more months to comply with the constitutional court order.
A recent federal court decision in Australia requires same-gender couples who break up to pay capital gains taxes on land holdings they divide when the relationship ends. A lesbian couple split up after 11 years together. After division of their joint assets, one woman ended up with the family home and the other got an investment property. But when the couple tried to transfer the ownership of the investment property, it triggered a massive capital gains tax bill of about $20,000 for each woman and the resulting court case. A heterosexual couple in the same situation would not have to pay any capital gains tax until such time as the property was sold. Australia's Administrative Appeals Tribunal found that only heterosexual couples qualify for the capital gains tax relief. The judge found that while changes in 1990 to the tax law defined heterosexual de facto couples as spouses, it didn't include same-gender relationships. Put in other words, he said, it is clear enough that the legislature was prepared to go so far but no further. There will undoubtedly be many who consider that the definition of spouse should include persons of the same sex, and the tribunal itself has some sympathy with this point of view, he added. But it is not the law at this time. The women's lawyer called it a discriminatory decision and said they're considering an appeal.
13 alleged lesbians were outed by the Ugandan newspaper Red Pepper late last week. They included two boutique owners, a basketball player, and the daughters of a former MP and a prominent sheikh. Under the headline, Kampala's Notorious Lesbians Unearthed, Red Pepper urged its readers to provide it with information about any lesbians they know. To rid our motherland of the deadly vice, the tabloid said, we are committed to exposing all the lesbos in the city. One Ugandan lesbian activist told reporters that, I know that some women are definitely going to lose what they have, jobs, homes, families, and friends. Red Pepper outed 45 alleged gay and bisexual men last month. According to Uganda's Gay and Lesbian Alliance, unidentified men in army uniforms assaulted one of the outed gay men. He was taken to a police station and forced to confess to being gay. Another young man on the Red Pepper list was thrown out of the house by his parents. His mother guessed that he had sought refuge with a gay couple he knows and gave police their address. They were arrested on homosexuality charges, subsequently released on bail, and are now in hiding.
There have been a series of government-backed attacks on Ugandan LGBTI people in the last year, including a police raid on the home of Victor Juliet Mukasa, the lesbian leader of the country's LGBTI movement. Homosexual activity is punishable in Uganda by life in prison under laws originally introduced by the British colonial administration in the 19th century. Activists there consider the continued outings to be an open invitation to the police and queer bashers, and they fear increased state and vigilante persecution. Red Pepper is reportedly owned by the half-brother of the president of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, who British activist Peter Tatchell calls a homophobic tyrant who tramples on democracy and human rights. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have been among the global rights groups condemning the outings.
Nepal's queer community, who helped oust the regime of unpopular King Gyanendra, is now being targeted by the new government they helped put in power, according to a report this week by the Indo-Asian News Service. The new government pledged to uphold democracy and human rights, but has started what Nepal's most prominent queer rights group, Blue Diamond Society, calls a cleansing drive against obviously gay men and transsexuals, or Metis, in the capital, Kathmandu. Blue Diamond's president, Sunil Pant, says arbitrary arrests began about a month ago. Metis are being jailed and beaten by police and are often forced to falsely confess to having sex in public. They're being prevented from moving around freely in the capital, says Pant, and they have low literacy levels, no money, and almost no professional skills. In Nepal's conservative society, where a son is valued much more than a daughter, gays and lesbians are regarded as freaks, and homosexuality is a punishable offense. However, with the support of Blue Diamond, Nepal's first public gay wedding was defiantly celebrated earlier this year. Activists have been urging the new government to end homophobic laws and incorporate LGBT rights in a new constitution now being drafted.
The National Latino Congreso, the largest gathering of Hispanic community activists in the U.S. since 1977, approved a resolution during a three-day meeting this week in Los Angeles calling for full lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender equality and civil rights protections. The resolution also calls for, among other things, support for Latino-Latina LGBT people who want to openly serve their country in the military, for legislation that would enable LGBT Latino-Latinas to sponsor the immigration of their partners living in other countries, giving LGBT Latinos-Latinas the choice to legally marry, and rejection of efforts to exclude LGBT people from the larger Latino-Latina United States familia. Passage of this resolution represents not only a historic moment, said resolution co-author Marlon Morales of the National Latino Coalition for Justice, but in practical terms assures that Latino policymakers have a mandate to consider how their future policies and legislation will contribute to securing full human and civil rights for LGBT Latinos. Activist groups such as Bienestar, Equality California, and Lambda Legal also helped spearhead passage of the resolution.
And finally, lesbian tennis legend Martina Navratilova, a month shy of her 50th birthday, closed out her professional career this week in fitting fashion with a mixed doubles championship at the U.S. Open. Teaming with Bob Bryan to crown her competitive career, it was Navratilova's 59th Grand Slam title. She left the sport in 1994 after winning 167 singles titles, including six straight at Wimbledon from 1982 to 1987. She returned for doubles in 2000 and insisted before this week's tournament that it would be her last. "This is definite, not allegedly," she said. "This is a closed chapter. It's past midnight. It's past my bedtime." Navratilova said she thought she could have played another 5 years at a top level, telling reporters, "I'm quitting because I want to, not because I have to." Recalling her first pro victory at a tournament in Orlando, Florida in 1974, Navratilova said, "I didn't have anyone to hug because I didn't know anyone. I hugged a light pole next to the umpire's chair." Navratilova defected from then Soviet-dominated Czechoslovakia during the U.S. Open in 1975. She began a gradual public coming-out process a few years later, capped by her featured speech at the 1993 National March on Washington for LGBT Rights. Bryan and Navratilova won $150,000 for this year's U.S. Open doubles victory. When they were presented with the ceremonial check, Bryan handed it to Navratilova. "All yours," he said.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 16th, 2006. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Kareem Ferguson.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, reviews of LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also now get CDs of our regular program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org. You can also demonstrate your solidarity by taking part in an online benefit auction. Look for the This Way Out area at alternabid.com. Again, to find out more about special CD thank you gifts, subscriptions, and the auction, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
I remember your name. I remember your voice. I remember your dreams. I remember your tears. I remember your life. I remember your love. Love never dies. I remember your name.
It's been almost 30 years since Andrew Halloran's groundbreaking novel Dancer from the Dance, described as one of gay literature's most important works. Halloran is a journalist, teacher, and the author of several other notable novels, but he hasn't published a new one in almost a decade. That drought has ended with the semi-autobiographical Grief, about a lonely and jaded middle-aged gay professor trying to cope with many losses. Halloran recently sat down with This Way Out's Brian Goebel in San Francisco to read an excerpt and to explain how the letters and journals of Mary Todd Lincoln leads his protagonist to new, poignant truths.
Andrew Halloran, it does seem like the protagonist, whose name we never learn, is grieving many things, has a kind of collective grief. His life is filled with loneliness. He wants intimacy. And he's also trying to deal with the loss of friends who've died of AIDS. And yet, you said in an interview that as you were writing this, it was sometimes difficult for you to pin the source of the grief.
It's true. The weird thing about writing is you do something and then you hear from other people what you did. And I didn't know what I was doing writing this book, really. It was a very strange experience. I felt like I was crawling through some foggy, smoky stuff, just feeling my way. And in Philadelphia, at the first reading, at the Q&A, a man said, "This book isn't about grief," he said. "It's about untreated depression." And I said, well, okay. And then another person said that it's really about coming to terms with a loss of desire. And I said, okay, that too. And walking around this morning, I was thinking to myself, it's about loneliness. It's about aging as a gay man. It's about the loss of friends to AIDS. It's about the loss of the narrator's mother. It's about the loss of a lot of stuff. So I think you're right. But I wasn't aware of it at the time. The narrator goes to visit his friend Frank, who has asked him to come to Washington. And Frank has lost his mother, too. And they begin talking about grief. And Frank says in a strangely altered voice, as I sat down on the edge of the bed, could you just fluff my pillow first and get the cold cream? I find cold cream so soothing on a day like this one. I don't see how you can joke like that, I said. It's easy, he said. She didn't even recognize me the last 2 years. Besides, grief is useless after a certain point. Don't you agree? I suppose so, I said, but everyone's point is different. Of course, he said, but the sooner you get over it, the better, because none of us has any time to waste, you know. I'm sure your mother didn't expect you to sit in that house down there for the rest of your life babysitting her figurines. You can't sit Shiva forever. Yes, you can, I said. What do you mean, he said. I mean the only cure for grief is time, but some people need more than others. Some people, in fact, may never have enough time. Not everyone can move on. Why not, he said in a cool voice. Because grief is what you have after someone you love dies. It's the only thing left of that person. Your love for, you're missing them. And as long as you have that, you're not alone. You have them. But they're gone, he said. Not if you grieve, I said. Your grief is the substitute for their presence on Earth. Your grief is their presence on Earth. No, it's not, because they're still not there, he said, unless you believe in the afterlife. You don't believe in the afterlife, do you? I'm not sure. I don't see how you can, he said. Why? It raises too many questions if you do, like, how old are you in eternity? How old are your parents? Do you have to go to the toilet? Where does everyone sit? What do you do at night? And where are they now if they still exist? I know it's hard to accept the fact that people disintegrate into a little pile of chemicals worth about 67 cents on the current market, but in all likelihood that seems to be the case. So there's no point in grieving any longer than you want or have to. Don't you still feel grief over your mother? Not really, he said, blowing out a stream of smoke. That may be because she no longer knew who I was when I came into the room. Or it may be because it was a question of survival. I was fighting for my own life at the time. Of course, I always was with her. Or it may be that I'm not over it yet at all, but have to focus on other things. Grief is a luxury, I think, I can't afford. One has to move on. But I've watched people try, I said, and fail. Who? I've seen a lot of friends make mistakes. They lose someone, they try to start a new life, and make one wrong choice after another. But what's wrong with that? You always make mistakes, he said. How could you not? But no one wants to make mistakes, I said. No one does anything thinking it's going to be a mistake. Of course they don't, he said, but they do something. The point is to choose something. It almost doesn't matter what. But choose. You have to start over. But what is the point of starting over? Henry Adams, after his wife killed herself, said he was too young to die, but too old to start over. That's the problem with our age. What does Henry Adams have to do with it? I was thinking of him when the church bells were ringing as I was walking through Lafayette Square last night. But why, he said. Because Adams had to deal with grief. He was 47 when his wife killed herself. She had just taken care of her own father till he died. Then she returned to Washington. Everything seemed fine. Then one day, while Henry Adams was downstairs reading, she went upstairs and swallowed one of the chemicals she used to develop her photographs. She left a note saying that if only she had one good quality, she would have continued living, but she didn't. Of course, she had lots of good qualities. She had just nursed her father through his final illness. It was pure depression, pure guilt. Adams was devastated, but his grief took an unusual form. The day after she died, he came downstairs, tore the mourning band off his arm, and forbade anyone to mention his wife's name ever again. Nor does he ever mention it in his autobiography. In contrast to Mary Todd Lincoln, I said, who grieved till she died, in a more ostentatious manner, who, you might say, tried to move on and couldn't. Because she was bipolar, said my friend, pushing his blonde bangs off his forehead. She was a woman who was subject to a string of disasters so awful, one after the other, you can see perfectly well why she never got over them. Nothing comes close to what happened to Mary Todd Lincoln. What about Jackie Kennedy, he said. Jackie Kennedy saw her husband shot too, but she moved on, a second act that was quite dignified and productive. And do you know why? Why, I said. Social class, he said, stubbing out a cigarette. I suspect it was simply social class. Of course, she was also medicated. What does grief have to do with social class? Everything, he said. At least it has to do with how you behave. Like a Roman or a banshee, Mary Lincoln ended up the second. But there are a lot of people who never get over certain things, I said. Something in them snaps, something that binds them to life. The past becomes their home. The dead become more real to them than the living, because there are more of the dead. They miss the dead, and when that happens, life stops. Speak for yourself, he said, standing up and tying the belt of his robe about him. He went to the window and looked down into 16th Street. For me, life has just begun. I'm like the woman behind the bar in a French movie, stuffing francs into her bra. I'm counting every chit I get. I want it all. And that's my advice to you. I think you should buy a place in Washington, he said, turning around. The market is never going to go down. It may level off, but you won't lose money. And we can find you someone. Everyone here is so middle class. Even the fags want to be married. I think you should start looking now.
The protagonist describes his landlord as a homosexual emeritus. And there's a part in the book where you say sex had left him in its wake. He was a man who'd been riding the rapids of a river, who finally finds a cove, a still pool, and pauses there to catch his breath, though after a while he realizes it's not just a pause, but rather the place he has ended up, beached in the sunlight, exhausted, no longer able to get in that cold and tumultuous river again. So I guess the question is what happens to a gay man who no longer desires sex, but still longs for intimacy?
Well, you've just read probably the paragraph that I like most in the book. I was, again, walking around San Francisco before coming here, and I went to a little park that I always go to, which I think is near Danielle Steele's house, the mother of us all. And it's got that incredible view. Those two brown shingled houses on either side, I don't know if she lives there or ever did, but there was a group of little Chinese-American school kids on that little tiny park area, and they were drawing. And it was so much fun listening to them. There were so many things going on. There was a little debate about whether who spoke Chinese and who didn't, and one little boy was ragging a little girl for speaking Chinese when she should have spoken English, and then a dog came out and frightened them all, and they all ran off. And I was just standing there immersed in these children's voices and their delight and their excitement and fun, and I began to have a rather sappy feeling. I thought to myself, this is what happens when you get older. You no longer cruise the streets. You find yourself in a park of Chinese American school children and getting off on their delight in life. And I suppose that's just a normal progression in life. But it struck me the minute I got to San Francisco last night, in a sad way, that San Francisco always meant for a New Yorker, at least for a gay, a male New Yorker, sex. And the minute you got here and you got out onto the street and started walking, there was a sexual undercurrent that was so powerful and so delicious. And this time I came back and I thought to myself, you're hearing an echo of that, but you're no longer, you're like a porpoise or a dolphin that can no longer hear those underwater things. You're just not in that energy field anymore. And then I thought this morning with the kids in the park, I thought, well, is this what one does? I guess so. Part of me is fine with that, and part of me thinks it's like a gangster having to retire. You feel this is a loss of virility or energy.
I want to talk a little bit about the letters of Mary Todd Lincoln, which you describe in the book as very engrossing letters. What do you think the protagonist ultimately learns from Mary Todd Lincoln?
I think it's in that line where the narrator asks the landlord why we care about the past, and he says, because it gives dignity to our paltry little lives, or something like that. It's what the celebrity culture does for people in contemporary times, I think history does for us in terms of the past. It takes you out of your own life. And why did Shakespeare write about kings? You know, why did he write about King Lear and Hamlet instead of the parlor maid and the peasant? There's also something that the ancient Greeks knew about tragedy, that it happened to elevated people. And Mary Todd Lincoln was this epic historical person, and yet she went through this wrenching, horrible denouement to a life that had been happy until then.
There's a line in her letters, of course, because now I've gone and started reading the letters, but there's a line where, you know, this is after Lincoln has been assassinated, and a White House guard describes Mrs. Lincoln as being in a daze, almost in a stupor. She hardly spoke. And then he described her this way: no one could get near enough to her grief to comfort her. And to me, that's like the protagonist in grief, that even though he has friends that try to comfort him and give him advice, ultimately he cannot be comforted.
That was the whole point of the book. I knew, while I didn't know much about the book, how I would do it, I did know that I wanted the ending to be that after being exposed to all of these urges to move on, to start a new life, that he would not. And the initial last line of my book was much more grandiloquent than the one that closes it now. I actually wanted to close this novel with a line. He gets back to the house, and the last line was, "Grief was my home was grief." And it was decided that that was a little too much, I think, over the top. But that was exactly the point of the whole thing from the beginning.
Andrew Holleran, thank you.
Thank you.
For This Way Out, I'm Brian Goble in San Francisco.
I remember your name. I remember your voice. I remember your dreams. I remember your tears. I remember your life. I remember your love. Love never dies.
I remember your
name. I remember your name. I remember your voice. I remember your dreams. I remember your tears, I remember your life, I remember your love.
You can get Andrew Holleran's Grief, published by Hyperion, in better brick-and-mortar bookstores and at the usual online destinations. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Kareem Ferguson, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, and Brian Goble contributed program material. You heard excerpts from Jeffrey Moline's I Remember Your Name, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special CD thank you gifts. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 5GFM, Kadena, South Australia, KHSR, Crescent City, California, WFCS, New Britain, Connecticut, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.